Welcome to the Reach the Stars podcast, a collection of conversations with cool people who do cool things. Brought to you by Papercraft Miracles. Each week, we'll bring you inspiring stories of persistence, passion, and purpose. With your host, Jonna Willoughby Moore.
Welcome to the Reach the Stars podcast. I am your host, Jonna Willoughby Lore, and today my guest is Susie Payton. She's super, super interesting. So she just became an entrepreneur after 17 years of teaching in all sorts of different schools. She is a life coach and got qualified to do that during the quarantine lockdown. And she's now coaching and teaching comedy improv and delivering autism and ADHD training to charities and has been doing lots of stand-up and improv. So hopefully this show is pretty funny. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So do you want to tell everyone a little bit more about you and where you come from?
Yeah. So I'm in, my name's Susie. I'm in Brighton on the south coast of England. So it's nice part of the world to live. I'm 45 years old. And as you just said, yeah, I've just become an entrepreneur after 17 years of teaching and various jobs. And the timing, you know, a really bad time for the world, obviously, the pandemic. However, it gave me the chance to think about, okay, what am I going to do? How am I going to make this work? So, like you say, qualified as a life coach, which I started that qualification 8 years ago, by the way. So it took me a while to get there, but I'm there now and I'm coaching, teaching comedy, training, and loving it.
That's awesome. Good to know. So I'm curious about your journey in ADHD, having ADHD, being neurodivergent, and also becoming an entrepreneur at the same time, because that is all my whole life, pretty much.
Yeah. It just suits me down to the ground. I was diagnosed with ADHD, inattentive subtype. So I think in America, you call it ADD. That was about 8 years ago. And it kind of helped me make sense of a lot of my strengths and challenges, should we say. So I've always been kind of easily distracted, found it hard to focus, but can focus on things I'm interested in. So things that are fun, I'm there, but boring things, not so much. So it's an attention-based nervous system. It's not a deficit, in my opinion. Now I've had lots of jobs, lots of different jobs, always working with people. That's been the key thing, helping people, children, adults, you know, all ages. It was always quite hard working for other people, you know, getting up certain time, trying to meet all of the expectations, work, 9 to 5, you know. So now being an entrepreneur, I can choose my hours. I can work really hard when my energy is really high. And then when the energy is low, I can take time, you know, give myself time off to rejuvenate. So the two go hand in hand, I would say.
That's awesome. I find that having ADHD makes it great when I am working on something that I want to work on, and terrible when there's so many things that I'm like, I don't really want to do that. That's going to stay at the bottom of the list for a really long time.
Yes, I've got a list here with lots of things on the bottom of it. I've got a coach as well who is helping me kind of follow through on the not so interesting things. Yeah.
So you're working with an ADHD specific coach?
No, she's not. She's a business and mindset coach for creatives. So we just clicked, found each other, and I thought actually I can learn a lot from her, and I have been. She's been great. So
yeah. I for sure would not be where I am without all the coaching that I have done over the last couple of years. I know that coaches aren't necessarily therapists, but in my world they kind of are. So they really go hand in hand to help me stay on track and get out of my head and you know, hyper focus on the right things, because that's definitely my strong suit in my ADHD is being hyper focused on things. So I can go down and start working on a project for my company, and I don't even realize that I've been working for 15 hours and I didn't like drink any water or anything else. And my husband's like, "What are you doing? Where are you? What is happening?" And I'm like, "Oh, sorry. How long have I been gone? A little bit." It's like, what? It's interesting.
Yeah. And it's great. When the hyperfocus kicks in, it takes me a while to get there, but when it's in, it's like, there's no disturbing me. And if somebody is disturbing me, like, I work from home now, but you know, if the dog's trotting around, we've got wooden floors, I'm like, oh my God, I can't handle it. And I need to just, you know, stay in that zone. Such a great place to be when I can get in it, you know?
Yeah, for real. I've found a couple of really handy things that work well for me. They just legalized marijuana in New York State, which is like a godsend for me, because it's like the one thing that really helps my brain kind of slow down and be able to follow through on tasks, which is, you know, not the case for a lot of people. Usually it makes them not want to do anything, but makes me capable of only doing one thing at a time as opposed to 100. So between that, and I have this particular playlist that I put together on Spotify, of songs that just get me in the zone, and they're all kind of instrumental but upbeat, so I'm not distracted by the lyrics. And so now I just like smoke a little bit, I put on my playlist, and I'm like, I'm in the zone, I'm gonna do my stuff, I'm gonna get the work done, as they say on one of my favorite shows, Being Boss. Do you ever listen to that podcast?
No.
Oh, you'd love it. You should check it out. Okay. We'll put a link in the show notes to Being Boss. You should definitely go listen to that show. But one of the things that they talk about is that there's so many creatives and entrepreneurs who have all these grandiose, great ideas. There's a lot of creative ADHD entrepreneurs out there who have all these ideas and don't have a lot of follow through and have a really hard time actually sitting down and doing the work that you need to make things happen. And I definitely have that issue as well. So it's nice to be reminded that you should go do the work. So I want to know if you will talk more about doing improv. I think that's super interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I discovered it around 10 years ago. And before I discovered it, I never did any performing. I didn't do drama at school. I was always quite shy in a way, shy in groups, you know. But there was something in me that wanted to perform, obviously, otherwise I wouldn't have found it. But I worked for a lovely organization where I was delivering groups, group work in schools. And they said, you know, go and find a course, add to your skills. So found an improv course in Brighton, 6-week course, and never looked back. Like, absolutely fell in love with improv. It's just so fun. It's free. You know, there's structure, but there's freedom. You can, you know, it's a big thing in America as well, isn't it? So I just fell in love with it. I did loads of courses. I did performances. I then did stand-up comedy for a couple of years, using the improv skills as well as writing stand-up material. Then I kind of went off of the stand-up, which happens with ADHD, doesn't it? You're kind of really into something and then it's like, oh, I don't want to do that anymore. I was like, no, please. But, you know, but the improv stayed, I think, because it always changes. Every scene is different, isn't it? So with the lot, I'd always done a few workshops here and there. I did some for, like, within work for team building. Feedback was great. It was amazing. And, yeah, last year I kind of took it online. I've been doing some free workshops. I'm doing a course at the moment, and they're doing a show next week, an end of course show, all on Zoom. So it's a bit of a challenge, but still great fun. And I call it the joy of improv, because that's what my mission is, to spread the joy of improv to everyone.
That's so great. I love it. I started performing when I was really young. I was 12 when my mom made me go to my first open mic and read my poems to people, adults. And at the time I was really terrified of doing it. And I remember telling her, "Wow, I'm really scared to go do this." And she said, "The only difference between nervousness and excitement is fear. And when you're up in front of people, there's really nothing to be afraid of. And there's everything to be excited about." And so every time I go on a stage, I think about that. And the more that I've done it, I mean, I'm almost 40, so I've been performing a long time. And now as soon as I'm going to go up on the stage, you know, a lot of people feel that, they call it the nervous energy. But for me, I'm like, that's the excited energy. And I'm just like ready to throw it out there on the stage. And that's the one thing, I think the number one thing that I miss most because of COVID is being able to perform for an audience. And it just, I get real squirrely if I don't get to do it. And it like really, I get very overwhelmed with all of the energy that I have inside of me if I don't have that outlet to like throw it out into the world to receptive people who want to have it, which is part of the reason that I started this show last year, because I was just sitting at home. My husband's very introverted and he's kind of like, "I heard those stories already. I don't want to talk to you anymore." And we have two little kids and they're young. They're 6 and 3. So, you know, they're not trying to have big conversations with me unless they're about, you know, Legos or snakes. So I'm like, "Oh, I need people. I'm dying." So I started this show and it has been amazing. At first I started it to kind of reconnect with a lot of my friends who live far away or didn't live that far away, but I still couldn't see them. And to have kind of these intentional, deep conversations about our lives and the world and COVID and what life is like and lockdown and be able to share those conversations with other people. And I started branching out to interview people that I don't know. And it has been so, so awesome. So I'm really glad to meet you and to have you on the show and for all of our listeners to get to meet you too. One of the things I really wanted to make sure that I did, we were recording this during June. So I wanted to make sure that I gave preference to people who are LGBTQAI plus all of the acronyms on the end of that, because it is Pride Month. And so I want to know if you can talk a little bit about your experience in the world as a non-traditional, I guess, having different sexual orientation than the quote unquote norm.
Yeah. So, yeah, I married my lovely wife in 2016. So it's coming up to 5 years, actually, in December. And we met about 8 years ago or so.
And 8 years ago.
do you know what? It's just like my memory. It's just like, yeah, it was about 8 years ago. But yeah, everything happened 8 years ago, but it's probably more like the other stuff 8 or 9 years ago. But anyway, yes, 8 years ago we met. We're now got a house in Brighton with our lovely little, well, no, he's not little, a big rescue dog, called Pepsi. And, so I've been out of the closets probably since I was about age 21. So, yeah, I don't really know what else to say. Pride Month, of course, which is amazing. Brighton Pride is usually so much fun, like in August, but it's not happening this year, which, you know, I'm glad about, really. It's too soon. But next year, get back down to Pride and talk. No, who did we see last time? Grace Jones. Amazing.
Cool. So when you came out at 21, you're a little bit older than me, but not a whole lot. And I remember when I was a teenager, which probably was right around that same time that you were 21, I was maybe like 15, 16. I would say that I'm straight, but not narrow, you know? But when I was a teenager, I had super short hair. I was very punk rock and, kind of androgynous. And I think if it had been a more widespread thing to be, in a different place on the gender spectrum, I probably would have been for sure. And a lot of people were very confused about me and whether or not I was gay or straight or a boy or a girl or whatever. And, it was a different world then. I will say that for sure, that there was a lot of blowback and judgment. And there were so many people who assumed that I was gay that I was like, maybe I am gay. And I was like kissing girls just because those were the people who seemed to be interested in me at the time. And you know, you're a teenager, just go for crazy things. So I'm curious, like, what your experience was like, coming out, like, you know, was your family supportive of that? Did you have friends in the community? Like, what was that like in your life?
Yeah, it was, it's interesting because people have always been surprised that, you know, I didn't kind of have the look or act gay. So I think people were quite surprised. But yeah, the experience, because it was kind of, it wasn't something I'd always known, maybe deep down, but not always known. And I went away to work an activity instructor where you worked, where you lived, where you worked. Mm-hmm. And met my first girlfriend there. Who was very out, very loud, very proud. So yeah, that was my first experience. But I was really confused, and yeah, it wasn't like, oh, it took a year or so for me to be really comfortable with it. But I think because I always had this fear of what others thought, and I'm only just starting to kind of really examine that and think, actually, it doesn't matter what other people think. I know that now, but you know, it takes time to kind of come to that realization. So family was supportive. Yeah, really supportive. We had a few pubs local that we could go to, like gay night on a Wednesday night in this town called Chelmsford, and the pub was the Army and Navy. There was a gay pub in Southend, which is a seaside port. So there were a few places, and I lived in Essex, which is really close to London. Mm-hmm. So I was really close to the clubs as well. So I was quite fortunate, actually, because managed to get, you know, a handful of gay friends and go clubbing and stuff. So yeah, it was all quite positive.
That's awesome. It's always nice to hear that, because there's so many people who have had so many not positive experiences where their family's not supportive, and you know, they've had crazy violent encounters with people based on how they look or where they are. And it is nice to know that if other people do have the opposite experience and they're like, you know, actually it wasn't bad, it was fine, and everybody was cool about it. And I loved hearing that. That's great. So I want to know a little bit more about how you are incorporating all of these things together in ways that you're kind of helping people out in the world. Like, who's your ideal client to work with?
I tend to work mainly with people with ADHD. And it does tend to be women. I say people because, you know, I don't just say I will only work with women. I'll work with anyone. However, I think there is a kind of common ground where people have grown up with ADHD and not known about it, and have just always struggled in lots of ways. And the self-esteem, like, thing, I always thought I was stupid, but then I was really good at something. So it's, you know, all of that. So it tends to be people that have similar struggles that I've had. So ADHD, I also have been diagnosed with autistic traits. I believe it's more than traits, but anyway. And Tourette's, so I have mild tics and mild OCD. So people that tend to have had similar struggles to me with confidence, self-esteem, imposter syndrome, lots of fears and doubts. That's kind of who I really enjoy working with.
For sure. I just was diagnosed recently having ADHD. And as soon as I, it's crazy because I ended up, a friend of mine had posted a couple of memes on either Facebook or Instagram about what life is like inside your brain when you have ADHD. And I was like, oh my God, that's me. What? How did I let me? All of it made so much sense, like, immediately. And I was like, oh man, you know, like, that's why I do A, B, C, D, and E all the time. And it's been really helpful for me, obviously, to know that it's just not me being like a shitty, lazy person, but there is an actual reason why I have a really hard time doing certain things. Especially like executive dysfunction for me is really tough. I mean, if there's too many projects to work on, I just get paralyzed and I'm like, I can't do anything. And it's interesting for me how different that is in my home life than in my work life, because I run my own company and we work on a lot of custom projects and things like that. So when I come down to work, I can say, all right, well, I have these folders that have info. I can just pick one of them and just start doing it. But when I go up to my house and I realize it's like getting too cluttered and we've got little kids who've got toys all over the place and it needs to be dusted and the dishes need to be done and I got to mop the floor and do this and do that. And I'm like, I can do none of these things because there's too many to do and I don't even know where to start. And it has been really helpful knowing that that is a thing, as opposed to just wondering why I get so overwhelmed and just lie down on the couch and do nothing. Yeah. And it's been really helpful for my husband to know that it is a thing. So he doesn't say like, why are you not cleaning the house or doing anything else? Why are you laying on the couch watching Law and Order again? You know, to give him like a hint as to, you know, I'm not doing this purposely. I just literally can't do that. So I'm curious, like, how has your experience been since you got diagnosed with how it's just made this, a lot of things make sense?
Yeah. I mean, like you say, when, you know, I can get really easily overwhelmed. And when I was working full time, like I was working in schools, which thank goodness I don't anymore, because, you know, I was good at the teaching part. So I thought, well, this must be what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm good at this. But it was the paperwork, the constant paperwork, the constant monitoring, the constant assessing, just completely, you know, it was so much of a struggle, the paperwork side of things. And I just thought, why can't I do it? How does everyone else seem to just get on with it? So it used to cause a great deal of stress. Just knowing that there are reasons, like you say, I used to live in a house on my own, and I had the kitchen half done, and somebody came and did half of the kitchen and then left. It was just like that for years. The bathroom, yeah. So household things, just never got them done. I got into £20,000 worth of debt, just because I didn't know. I was more impulsive then, and I just didn't know where to go with it. So I just carried on and spending on credit cards and things. It was quite a bit of a mess, really. But once I kind of, because I was teaching, I did quite a bit of training on ADHD and autism, and things started clicking into place. So things, I'm a lot more accepting of myself, a lot kinder to myself, and I work with my brain. I don't try and make myself into a neurotypical, like I should be able to sit here and work 7 hours a day. It's not going to happen. And actually I could have one really productive day and the next day not do much at all. And that's okay. That's what I'm telling myself, you know?
Yeah, it's tricky. I have this company that makes a lot of things out of paper. So we do wedding invitations and handmade books and paper flowers and things like that. And it's just funny, as somebody who has made journals and planners and stuff by hand for decades, a really long time, that I am incapable of using a regular planner that has the month and then the week and that has like a handful of pages for notes at the end. I have an extensive collection of planners that are full in January and empty for the rest of the year. And I was just always so like pissed at myself. Like, why can I not use a planner like regular people? I can't do this. I just can't keep up with it. And I ended up starting to make blank bullet journals. So like these, like you can't really, you could, if you're watching the video, you can see it just has like dots on the page instead of a totally blank page. So I can write out my own calendar, right? So each month I'll draw my calendar on the page. And it gives me time to reset, look at my calendar, my phone, draw it all out, write everything down by hand. And when you write stuff down like that, it sticks in my brain. So now I'm like, ooh, I know that next Wednesday is that event I have to go to or whatever. And then each week I set up a different planner for what I'm doing that week. And so it's like, oh, who do I need to call? What tasks do I need to accomplish? Like little stuff do I need to accomplish? What am I working on? What projects are we working on? And what's coming up next week? And each day I write three or four things that I'm supposed to do that day. So it's not like this gigantic to-do list that's super long and I can't focus on any of it or do any of it. And it has been so, so helpful to be able to have these journals. And the first page of all of them, I make it as the table of contents. So it doesn't matter if this month I write out the month and then two of the weeks, I don't have time to write out the weeks. Who cares? I didn't write them out, whatever. I'll just write it out next time I get back on track. And because the book is blank, I don't feel those like empty pages where I wasn't on track as like a waste. It's not like in my face, like, look how much you suck at staying organized, you know, like, because it's just blank. And if I need to take notes for a meeting, I'll just write them on the next page, wherever that is, and then continue on with what I'm doing. Or if I have a whole bunch of ideas I have to write down, I just flip a page and write them right there. And so it's not like a regular planner never has that space in the middle to keep everything chronological like that. And it works so great for my brain. And then I just go through and I number all the pages and I write everything in the table of contents. So when I'm like, ooh, where are the notes from that meeting? I can look in the table of contents and just go flip and find them. So now I don't have these random pieces of paper with important stuff all over my life. It has been unbelievable. So the guy who created bullet journaling in the first place was also neurodivergent and was in the same boat. He's like, I have all of this stuff and I have no way to actually stay organized and to keep all my things in one place and to know where they are. And so he developed this whole system. And I was like, that is genius.
Yeah. Now that's something I've been meaning to look into, because I've got, you know, this book here I have kept this really for my comedy notes for my classes, but yeah, then I've got a big book there, I've got paper there, but yeah, I like that idea. So then you write in it and then you put it in your table of contents.
Yeah, and then when the book fills up, you just start another blank one and make a new table of contents and say, like, this is all the stuff that's in this book. So I actually have a whole stack of all of the little planners, because they're not very big. I mean, sometimes it takes me 4 months to use one, sometimes it's 6 months or whatever, and we make them here in my company. So I'm like, oh, I want that cute one, that's my next one, you know. So it's just been so helpful. And as somebody who also really gets calmed down a lot by watching and listening to ASMR videos, I don't know if you've heard about those, but it's like watching somebody cut a bunch of tomatoes or watching somebody draw something on a time lapse, or watching someone do calligraphy, or there's a lot that are just auditory too, like audible ones where you can just listen to somebody reading something with a really nice soft voice. And it just helps me to just chill out and reset. So I actually end up going down the ASMR rabbit hole on Instagram a lot by searching for other people who are doing bullet journaling and then looking at all the ways that they've like set up these beautiful things in their journals. So people will track their habits in their bullet journals and they do these beautiful habit trackers. So they're like, I want to start exercising and, you know, drinking less coffee or going to bed earlier, all these goals that they want to have, which a lot of people who are neurodivergent are like, I want to do all the goals. And then we pick 27,000 and get overwhelmed and do none of them and then feel bad about ourselves. So I just love looking at all these beautiful habit trackers, and they're so pretty. And you watch somebody set it up and draw it in their book, and you're like, I could do that. I could do this thing. So I actually ended up writing a couple out in my book, and it's just so nice to say, like, okay, today I'm going to go fill in, like, these are the things I wanted to do. And you like fill it in when you do it, and you do it for a whole month. And then at the end of the month, you get to look back and say, oh, I actually did do some of those things sometimes. And it's just really a nice way to rein in, I've been trying not to say the crazy, but kind of rein in the crazy, you know, like we're like all over the place. I'm like, I'm going to collect these into one place.
Yeah. And that is such a good idea. I'm definitely going to take that on board. I've also made myself a sticker chart recently. And that's got kind of things, four or five things that I must do, like that I've said that I must do, not that I feel I must do, Monday to Friday. And then I get a sticker, and each sticker is worth 50 pence. And I'm saying, I'll show it. So here it is. And I've got quite a few stickers going on. And I'm going to, the goal is to buy this Tropics Face Serum, which is something I wouldn't usually buy because it's quite expensive. And that helps me keep on track because I'm like, what am I doing? You know, like staring out the window, and I look back at that. So I've always got something to do, but not too many things because otherwise I'd be like, no, it's too much. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
So
just you finding... totally have a habit tracker. You just didn't know what to call it.
Yeah.
Love it.
But, yeah.
So yeah. I'm going to link to a bunch of bullet journaling resources and stuff for anyone who's listening to this show, because it was the first time in my life that I continued using the same planner for more than a year. I just kept going with it. And I started in January of 2019, and I still have my journal, planner, whatever you're going to call it, my book on my desk every day. And whenever I'm meeting with people or taking notes or anything, it's all in the same place. And man, it's just so nice to be able to find all of this great nuggets of wisdom. Cause I have a lot of conversations with people and meetings with different people and working with my coaches and like taking notes about each time we have a meeting and things like that. And previously I would write it all down on a piece of paper, stash it in a drawer, or fold it up and put it inside some other planner that I was not going to use. And then years later, I have to go and sort through all these half empty planners and notebooks. And I end up finding all these folded up pieces of paper and trying to go through and introduce myself to all these like topics and resources and stuff like that. And it's so overwhelming to have it just all over the place. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with these now? You know, like, so I'm glad that going forward, all of my important little nuggets will all be in these books, and I'll like put them on a shelf and they will all be together, and oh, it's going to be good.
Yeah. No, I'm going to do that. Give it a try. Definitely.
Awesome. So before I get too distracted, story of my life. At the end of all of the podcasts, I ask all the guests the same five questions. So it's five question time. And I like when I don't tell people that they're going to get asked five questions at the end. Cause I find that people, the answers that people come up with, like after we've sort of talked for a little bit, kind of get to know each other a little bit, we're in that conversation zone, feeling a little good, feeling a little trusting of other people and opening up, then I can ask people these questions. If I were to ask them right at the beginning of the show, people are going to be like, what is my rehearsed answer for this? You know? And yeah. I love that almost every time I do this show, people end up saying, well, I've never talked about this publicly, but I'm going to. And that it kind of gives people that safe space to just really be who they are and to talk about hard things. And I just love that. So without further ado, five question time. So the first one is, tell me about an experience or a single moment that shaped who you are today.
An experience or a single moment that shaped who I am today.
Like after that one moment, you're like, man, everything is totally different because that happened.
Yeah. It's trying to think of different things, but it would be when my mother died about 9 years ago. So not 8 years ago. That completely changed my life, my outlook. Completely changed me. Well, not completely. I'm still the same person, obviously. But a lot of things decisions I make now are with her in mind. She was very creative. I think she had ADHD as well. So she was, she could get quite overwhelmed, but she was very creative, made loads of art and crafts. So I try and do things now for her as well, like my journey into a full-time self-employment. I feel like I've got her watching over me saying, do it, do it now. So yeah, that's what I'd say.
Me too. I'm sorry you're in my shitty club. It's a real shitty club to be in. And it's weird for me. I lost my mom when I was pretty young. I was 20. And so next year is more years without her than years I had with her. And it kind of sneaks up on me like that, I knew her mostly in, the very young years of my life. And the more that I learn about who she was as a person before she had kids is just so eye-opening for me to be like, no wonder I am the way I am, all these things that I would love to have asked her about and had her advice on. I find myself often thinking like, what would she say about this or what would she do? And I'm pretty, I don't know if I would call it like spiritual or whatever, but I'm pretty woo-woo. I'm a little out there, as far as the energies of the world. And I believe in weird shit. That's like, if I was to pick one religion, that's it. Weird shitology. And there have been so many things in my life that have happened around specific dates. And her birthday is one of those dates that, like, since she died repeatedly, a lot of times in the last 20 years, something really major has happened to me on her birthday. And that it's not necessarily at the time seems like something that would be good, but something that I need to happen shows up right around the time of her birthday every year. And so it's just really interesting for me to talk to other people who are like, losing my mom really changed me and I feel her around me all the time and feel her rooting me on. And I definitely see that when things come up on her birthday, that's her way of saying like, here you go, here's something that you need. And I mean, the 1 year my dorm burnt to the ground on her birthday, toast. I lost all of my stuff, everything. And at the time, the first couple of days, I was like, well, this sucks. Who's making a movie about me? And it was only about 4 months after she died. And she died on Friday the 13th, too. So I was like, really? That's happening? Okay. Weird. And it was really interesting for me to have that happened to me at 20 years old. And to be going to school in another state about 800 miles away from where I lived at home. And to all of a sudden I was a total instant adult. My brother and I had inherited our house because we no longer lived with her, but we had her house and we had to figure out how to pay bills and take care of a house that was falling down and do repairs and do all of that. And I was still going to school really far away. And then on top of it, losing all of my stuff. And it was such a crazy experience for me. But I think being able to have all that happen to me and come out on the other side with not necessarily like a everything happens for a reason kind of motto, but there is good luck and bad luck in everything that happens to you. And even when things seem really fantastic, like there are always drawbacks, there are sacrifices of other things that you can't do because that big thing came up or vice versa. And so, having that be the first birthday she would have had after she died, I really started noticing things that came up. And just having a mom who also was very, very creative. She was always trying to make art, but never knew how to make any money making art. So she didn't get to do what she loved. And now that I know that I have ADHD, it's just so obvious that she had it and nobody knew about it and didn't know what to call it. And we're just like, you're super smart. You know, she could read three books, whole books in a day, every day of her life and not have a problem with it, but couldn't pay bills for shit. And couldn't keep files or couldn't clean her house and just was very overwhelmed by her things. And she was always collecting stuff that you couldn't do anything with really. And she was just always so worried, like, I might need that someday. Yeah. She couldn't get rid of things. And so it was really, we grew up in a really crazy atmosphere. I mean, we had 10,000 books in our one floor apartment and every piece of mail that had come into the house pretty much. And we had magazines and newspapers and she ran a literary magazine. So we had manuscripts and envelopes like all over. I didn't even know that we had hardwood floors until I was 20 years old because I'd never seen them. And so to finally have my own space that I could organize however I wanted was amazing in college. And then having it burned to the ground with all these things that I thought I needed to survive and then to have them all just disappear was such an eye-opening experience to be like, you know, that's her teaching me in a way that these, the only way you can really, really learn that you don't need any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And so ever since then, whenever something happens to me like that, I'm always on the lookout for, you know, what am I learning from this? What's going to happen? What can happen because that has happened to me? And so I think about that a lot when crazy things happen. And in the last show, the last episode, I ended up interviewing this woman who came and worked for me and has since become one of my best friends. She doesn't work for me anymore. And during the recording of the show, I found out that the day she moved to Buffalo, to the same town where I could then meet her and find her, was on my mom's birthday.
Really? Yeah. Oh my God.
So I was thanks, Mom, for sending me this amazing person who like changed my life. You know, it's I love that kind of stuff.
Anyway.
Okay. Totally distracted. Question number two, when you feel defeated or overcome, what do you tell yourself to keep going?
What do I tell myself? Just, you can do it. You've done it before. You can do it again. It's okay to feel the way you feel. Because I've just realized that any like difficult feelings, I've just tried to kind of avoid and just make them good again. But it's like, no, notice the feeling and just tell myself you can do it. You can do anything within reason.
I love that. Okay, number three. Tell me about a way you overcame a failure or a mistake and what you learned from it.
A failure or a mistake? So I was always quite, I wasn't very good at maths, and I still am not very good at maths. Yeah, so when I decided I wanted to be a teacher, I had to get a C grade. So I thought once I finished school, I wouldn't have to even bother with it anymore. But I went to work for 4 years and then I decided to be a teacher. So to get into university to do teacher training, I needed a grade C in maths. I already had the grade C in English. So I was like, oh, okay. So I studied at a local college. I did the exam and got a D again. No, not again. I got a D, so it wasn't enough. So I had to wait another year before I could go to university again, which, you know, I was already older than everyone else in my year because I took 4 years out. So I was then like, oh, shall I go or not? You know, because I didn't have to go to university. It's not like in America. It's, you know, you can or you don't have to. It's not expected. You know, it's not such a big deal. So I thought long and hard, and I thought, no, I do want to become a teacher. This is what I want to do. So I just thought, okay, I need to learn the basics, learn a bit more, learn any way I can, find a teacher that's really good, who understands. Because at that point, I didn't even know I had any learning difficulties. So about finding the right person. So a year later, I took the exam and I passed. So, yeah, perseverance, I think.
For sure. I remember in my third year of high school taking pre-calculus, and we had to learn how. I went to a technical high school, so I did a lot of science and math courses and things like that. Which, because I was interested in it, I usually did pretty well at it. And there was this one thing that they wanted us to do was to take two equations in parentheses and multiply them with each other. And I just couldn't do it. And I'm recently figuring out that one of the things that tends to kind of go hand in hand with ADHD is dyscalculia, which is difficulty with a lot of numbers, but also difficulty reading an analog clock, not knowing left and right and having that be really difficult, and then maps and directions. Mm. And I think that because of the way that you have to multiply the two parentheses, it's like you take these two, and it's very structured in the way that maps and directions would be as to how you do it. And it just doesn't, I can't put it to make sense in my head. And I remember I ended up writing this whole, I've been writing poetry a long time, and I wrote a poem about how I didn't know how to factor, and everybody else seemed to say, oh, it's so easy, you just do this. And I'm like, I can't do that. And it was one of the first times in my life, I'd always been pretty good at school. And it was the first time that I sort of hit that wall and was very like demoralized. Like, there's no way that I'm ever going to learn how to do this, and that I couldn't go be a scientist if I wanted to, because I don't know how to do this and I can't do it. And I'm sure that if I had a better teacher to get me to look at it in a different way, I probably would have been able to figure it out, but I still don't know how to do it. And I'm almost 40. So if anyone out there is really good at teaching factoring and you want to teach me, send me an email. Okay. Number four, what one trait or habit is most responsible for keeping you on track?
Trait or habit? I'd say creativity. Because I knew I had to, when I became full-time self-employed, it was only end of April that it was official. And I thought, oh, okay, I really am on my own now in terms of employment. I knew I had to find ways of keeping myself on track. And it's not just getting distracted by the dog or whatever. It's every time I stop doing a task and go and do something else, it just seems to take me a long time to get back into whatever I was doing. So I just thought, you know what, let's make a sticker chart. It's visual. I can see the rewards going up after every task, you know, and there's a reward at the end of it. It seems like a long way off. It's only another week, then I'd get my reward. But so being creative, I don't know that that's going to work for me next time. So at the end of this 4 weeks, I'm going to reevaluate, because I don't like doing the same thing over and over. So creativity is going to be my savior, I think, for keeping me on track. And, you know, being motivated and helping people is what I need to remember as well, because that's what I love doing, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I love that kind of using creativity to keep it fresh and keep it interesting. When typically brains like ours are like, oh, did that, boring. Already yeah. Did that, need something new experiences. Yeah. Must come my way all the time. So that's a great idea. Good tip out there that we're putting it out there in the world. Sticker charts. I do them with my kids, and I'm still not great at like being keeping that as a good routine. But my stepmother, who watches my kids, is very good at that kind of stuff. And so she kind of helps me to stay on task with keeping yeah. them on their task with their charts and stuff like that. So that helps. Yeah. Having people around you who don't have ADHD makes a huge difference in productivity, for sure. Yeah. Okay, number five, what's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten? And what advice would you give to other people?
This would have been within a coaching session. You know, I said earlier about I was always worried about what other people might think, and that would cause me to question myself, or should I do this, should I do that, you know, overthink. And she quite simply said, look, you can think what you like. Literally, you know, I don't have to think, or what will, you know, if I put this social media post out, oh, but what if some people don't like it? I don't have to think like that. You know, I can think people will love my social media post. They're either going to like it or not like it. If I think they're not going to like it, I'm just going to make myself feel rubbish. But if I think, yeah, they'll like it, or the right people will see it and like it, then I feel better. And then, you know, I've raised my vibration. So, yeah, you can think what you like. And also I've taken that step further. Should I post this? Should I post that? And I've said to myself, you can do what you like. You literally can. And it's only just dawned on me. So, yeah, I think those two bits of advice. Do what you like within reason, obviously, keeping it legal and appropriate and ethical. And think what you like. Think good things. Don't think bad of yourself.
Awesome. I love that. Aww. Well, that is my last question. Thank you for being on the show. Will you tell everyone where they can find you on the internet?
Sure. So I've got a website, susiepayton.com. I'm on Facebook, Susie Payton, Passionate and Driven Facebook Warriors. But if you can find me at susiepayton.com, then you can find my Instagram and everything as well. But yeah, awesome. Thank you for having me. It's been really nice.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show. And we will have all of Susie's links and the links to the other things we talked about and bullet journaling resources and fun ASMR videos and things like that in the show notes. So you can check those out. If you love this show, please review us on iTunes. It helps people who wouldn't normally see the show to have it referred to them. If you're watching this on YouTube, give us a little thumbs up, subscribe. But the most important thing that you can do is just tell somebody else about the show and have them kind of figure it out. Oh, it's real life. In the credits at the end of this show, it says, hey, y'all, this is real life. There's going to be fire trucks and motorcycles and dogs barking and children in the background, and you just have to suck it up. So do what you like. And I like not editing out all of the things that make it real life. So I find it interesting.
Yeah. Sorry about that. My dog is going absolutely bonkers.
No worries. No worries. Cause that's real life. And that's what we do up here on the Reach the Stars podcast. So thanks for being with us today. And we will see you next week with a new, fabulous, exciting guest and more fun things to talk about. And thanks for being here, y'all. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
A single interaction has the power to change your life forever. This is a place for the stories of those moments. Stories of pursuing dreams, overcoming tragedy and failure, of coming back to life after so much of what feels like dying, of continuing on with only a vision as a map. This is the place where those moments live on. Come sit by the fire, look up at the stars, and be forever changed too.
Thank you for being with us on the Reach the Stars podcast. Our theme music is generously provided by Byrocratic. You can find him on Bandcamp.com. Thank you to all of our current patrons, guests, and everyone else who helps make this dream a reality. We are so proud to be building this amazing community with all of you. If you love this podcast, please consider sharing with a friend, leaving a review on iTunes, and becoming a patron at www.patreon.com/reachthestars. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel to see the videos of these conversations. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, do something cool and tell us about it.